let's get back to the Rambam here. Okay, so go ahead. Who's reading here? Ve'ato achal l'daber b'masher tisi. Now he's going to talk about what we wanted to talk about. Right? We started this a little bit.
Ve'ato.
Yeah.
Ve'ato achal l'daber b'masher tisi. Da ki kishem shel yasin kasuma es hatzivayim. Lo yasik hacherish es hakolos, lo hisris
taivas hamishgal.
Hamishgal, kach lo yasigu agupos hatanugos hanushayim.
Okay, so he's saying that he's trying to explain why it is the difficulty we have in perceiving olam haba, because that's really how he starts out, right? That was really his first thing. The different ideas of Olam Haba, or the final Gemul. And he said nobody really talks about Olam Haba at all. They talk about these five other ideas that they have. Okay, but now he wants to talk about Olam Haba. So he says that he gives three examples. That a blind person can't see color. Blind person can't understand color, right? He's not masig, just doesn't comprehend it. And the deaf person doesn't comprehend kolos, and the soros, he doesn't understand the type of sexuality.
Soros, right? Like,
well,
numb?
I don't know if it means he's what?
Numb, or?
No, it means like castrated, but it doesn't necessarily mean literally castrated. This could be like a Swiss chama you have. There are different cases like that. It means like from the sun.
Okay.
But anyway, so what are these three saying? So I mean, we discussed this. I guess nobody knows. Nobody remembers anything. What was not here. But anyway, the question is, it's a funny thing, right? He says that the Summa does not master color. Right? Why does he say color? He doesn't see anything.
But, well, color is what sight determines.
Okay.
Color and shade.
Color and shade. Okay, good. In other words, did we just discuss this?
Insagigon, right?
Oh,
I think
it was just
here.
Illusions.
Yeah.
We read this.
Ah,
much
better. Correct. Now I can hear
correct.
It.
Correct. So, yeah. No, it's color is really the sense of sight. Sight is really just a matter of you really see light phenomena is what you see, which is color. We use it a lot for other things, for shapes and sizes and distances, but essentially it works through, like you said, what'd you say, shading and light?
Color and shade.
Color and shade. Okay, and so what's say? So he's saying that what's the example? The example of the blind person is that he doesn't have the faculty, right? Talking about the three cases where they're lacking a certain faculty, so they're not going to understand they're not going to understand the product of that faculty if they don't have the faculty. If you don't have eyes, you're not going to be able to understand that which is a product of the eyes, right? Okay, that's one set of examples. And then he goes to another set of examples. So, k'shem she'en hadog makir yisod ha'esh, right? A little different. V'nei shehu shorei b'hafcho. This is that what? Just like a fish, were a fish able to be makir things, right, he would not be able to understand the yisod of Aish. Interesting. Right? What does he mean, the yisod of Aish?
The fundamental
the right, the fundamental causes of Aish. Right? The fundamental phenomena of Aish, he would not be able to understand. Why? Because he lives in its opposite. So what's that as an example? So what does that mean? Now he's giving you two types of things where you can't understand something. First one is you don't understand it because you don't have the faculty. Right? It's like in our day and age, you like try to understand a radio wave. Yeah, we just don't. We don't have those kind of receivers in our head, in our, and it's not one of our senses. Just you just try to understand it by making it look like a picture, you know. But you can't really, you're not really masing it. You understand? Because we just don't have that kind of faculty. But what's the second example of why you don't understand something? See, the second example is what? It's deeper. It's not just, it's not the phenomenon. You could describe to the fish what a fire looks like. Right? You could describe it to him.
He can't understand the existence of it because it's opposite his existence.
It's opposite what he exists right. in.
He's so immersed in
water.
It means to say that he doesn't understand the framework of its existence, right?
Can't comprehend it as the opposite, though?
It's not really the opposite.
No, but even without that, he doesn't recognize it as an opposite. That's the whole point. Since he dwells in that thing,
he can't understand.
He doesn't know what it is. He can't relate to this.
No, there's certain events that events happen in a framework, right? There's certain. The yisod of fire is based on certain in a certain framework, and the fish is unfamiliar with that whole framework. He just never experienced that framework. He can't understand things operating in it. He can't understand things operating. He's not missing the faculty. It's not a question of faculty over here. Faculty is the phenomenon.
If you brought a ball of fire in a glass thing, then he would recognize it.
He would see it, correct. But it would be something that's incomprehensible. It would be like a miracle to him, right?
This tiny little fish.
So,
good Disney movie.
But what does it mean? Right, so it's not that he can't perceive it, but he can't understand it. It's impossible for him to understand it because the principles that it operates by are unavailable are incompatible with the environment that he knows. It's an interesting thing, right? It's incompatible with the environment that he understands. It's just not. In other words, it would be like. A lot of good examples tonight. Go ahead. You have something? No. You know, I have a very limited range of examples. You could probably guess anyway. It would be like, I mean, in this existence, everything is cause and effect, right? That's just the way it works. It'd be like to try to understand, subatomic phenomena, the way that it's explained. Just things just happen, right? We can't think about things like that. Like, no, things don't work that way in this world. Our world is based on it's based on cause and effect. That's what's so hard about quantum physics, right? Because they're saying, well, you got to imagine a world that's not based on cause and effect, right? It's just something we can't comprehend practically.
Do you know what he's referring to?
Sounds crazy to me.
Sounds crazy, right?
Well, look at Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, I mean, certain phenomena over there.
It was a theoretical cat.
The slit of the particles.
Anyway, so,
it's both alive and dead until they take a look at it.
Yeah.
They don't like quantum mechanics. They don't operate by cause and effect.
Like certain things in the subatomic world, they're based on they say the cause is just random. There's a whole big argument about these things, but if you believe that, then you have to believe that the subatomic world just works completely differently than the world that we know. Here, nothing just happens without a cause. There, it just happens. Things just happen. Why did this atom? Why did this one split in half? It just happened.
What do you mean?
Spontaneity?
Quantum theory, and then you're back.
Right, exactly. Exactly, like string theory. They say that there are 12, what are they up to? 10 dimensions now?
I think they got further, didn't they? I thought they added on two more.
So what does that mean? I mean, it's something we can't hear.
Slap on it, come on.
I mean, that's a little bit easier for me to comprehend, but because what it means is, I never really understood it until, but what they mean is that. Well, whatever. But anyway, so
not clear what they mean.
They have this funny thing in the end. They're tiny, right?
The dimensions.
The dimensions are very small, so you don't notice them. But
very fragile. If you step on them, they disappear.
Oh, you do. But it means basically that you can't necessarily take a straight line.
No, I think
that's basically.
I think the quantum mechanics idea was a good analogy.
Right.
I got really angry when someone explained quantum mechanics to me. Said it didn't make any sense.
So, yeah, well, like quantum, things can't exist in between these two spots. There's nothing like that in this world, right? That unless you make it like that, unless you.
No, but it's impossible.
Just like electrons trying to predict where they are.
Right, right, exactly. You can't know where it is. There's no real place where the thing is. There's nothing like that in this world.
The percentage of it being in one place.
Exactly. Right? Where is it? Well, there's a high percentage over here.
Electrons are part of the same world.
Huh?
Electrons are part of the same world.
The same world that we're in.
Not the subatomic world.
Yeah, no. That's
the point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think so. It's a very good example in that regard.
Okay. So those are the two problems with he's saying we have both of those problems over here. He's saying we have both of those problems over here. He says, "V'kol shehu chutz mizeh." Go ahead. Did I skip something? Yeah, I skipped something, right?
Kach lo
yodeh v'lo mazeh. Go ahead. So you're not going to, so in the world of the Gashmi, the Gashmi, right, that the physical, substantial world, you're not going to know the enjoyments of the spiritual. Right, you shut down the Valencia's way right here. Right?
And the microphone.
Here's the thing start getting a little murky. So he's saying that what? He's saying we don't have at all. We only have the oneg of what do you say? Ain't it's leinu klal oneg zulas oneg hagufos bilvad. The only oneg that we have, right? The only pleasure that we have is the pleasure of the gufos v'hasogas hachushim and the senses.
What about ideas?
That's a good question. And the senses. Okay. Now he says, and anything that's aside for that, anything that's outside of that, which is apparently the ruchni that he's referring to, right? Anything outside of the oneg of the guf and the hasogas hachushim and the senses is bilti motzi etzleinu. It's not found by us. There's no pleasure that's not goof, that's not an oneg of the goof and a sense. Or a sense. Okay? And we don't recognize it. But now he says like this. And we don't perceive it with an eon rishon. We don't perceive it at first sight. Okay? Without a lot of investigation.
That it exists.
The fish can't investigate into the sort of fire.
So we do. So he's putting a little bit. No, is he saying we can understand it a little? We can recognize it, right, and perceive it.
Its existence or its qualities.
That's a good question. So what does he mean? Yeah. So if he means to say.
No,
we can understand its existence.
Yeah, not
we can we can recognize and perceive that something like this exists, but like the blind man, I guess if you really worked on him, he could come to the realization that there is something like a color. There is something out there.
Oh, it's not his framework, really.
That there is another thing. In other words, but can he really understand what it is? No. But can he understand that there's something else out there?
Well, I mean,
that's the example you gave with the radio waves.
With the radio waves.
In theory, understand something that won't actually be it, but we could imagine how such a thing could exist.
But he doesn't understand the concept of color.
I
feel this thing.
He can't understand the concept of the color, but you could say to him, that's right, you feel it has a certain texture, well,
it would be the distinctions, meaning
see, there are a lot
color
of different types of textures. So,
yeah, no, it would be the distinctions of which you could teach him. Meaning, like, just like in touch, you can sense different things. So, too, in sight, you
can
sense different.
Sort of like hot, you know, hot and cold. So, you know, whatever.
He could understand with the distinctions of a sense, meaning he could sense the difference between a cupcake and
right. I would say to him, like, there's a sense that we have that I can perceive something at a distance. You can only perceive things through touch.
But then you could say that light is a thing which bounces off things and then at me, and then I can sense that.
All right, but anyway, but over here it's much easier. Over here it's much easier because of what Daniel said. I mean, we do have an idea of thinking. We do have some idea of something similar, in a sense. Let's go a little further. I want to go a little further because it seems like he contradicts himself a little bit later. Go ahead.
Davar kach l'kish anu sh'anu ba'olam hagufani lo nucha lahasig ela tanuga.
Okay, so again, he's going back on this theme over here. That we are in the physical world and we can only perceive its pleasures.
Abal ha'tanugos hanifshayim heim timidayim.
Okay, so now he's trying to explain, or he's trying to give us this perception that he says is attainable. Okay? Right? He says there is a perception that's attainable. And he's trying to convey it to us, I imagine. So he's describing certain qualities of the Tanaga Ruchni, as opposed to the Tanaga Guf. So what's the first quality that he mentions? Bilti nifsakim. They're constant. They're constant. Tanugos hanefshiim, right? The pleasures of the soul. Haim to medium. They're constant. Bilti nifsakim, without cessation.
Here does soul just mean non-physical?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Does soul here mean non-physical, or does it have some sort of other idea attached?
The soul means... He can explain a little later what he means by soul, but he means, basically, he means that which exists eternally in man. Okay. All right.
In bein alavein ilu hatanugos shum yachas b'shum opan klal.
Okay, so now, again, he's going back. There is nothing in common. There's no relationship between those tanugos of the nefesh, right, and of the guf. There's no relationship in any way at all. He's emphatic about this. There's no relationship in any way at all. Go ahead.
Okay,
so he's saying that we believe that it is correct that it's incorrect to say that these, now he's talking about Malachim, and let's leave it to Malachim right now, the Malachim, right? That he's saying it's not proper to say Malachim don't have pleasure. Okay, it's not proper to say that they don't have pleasure. Rather, they have great pleasure. In what? In what they know from the Borei, Yishadav Yisroel. They have great pleasure in their knowledge. In their knowledge. No, not physical pleasure, but he's saying don't think. No, he's trying to say, don't think. He's doing like a funny. He's doing like almost an impossible thing, because it's almost an impossible thing that he's trying to do here. Because on the one hand, he's saying there's no relationship at all between pleasure that we have and their pleasure, but on the other hand, it does have something in common because it's pleasure. You know what I'm saying? Don't think there's nothing in common, so they don't have pleasure. If I say there's nothing in common at all between our pleasure and what they experience, saying it's wrong to say, therefore, that they don't have pleasure. Okay?
Pleasure just is
but
similar.
If you
have a great pleasure, he says.
But if you're saying that it's so, then like it's a meaningless word. You could say the word as applied to them, but like,
right.
You have no knowledge of what that means, so that's how could you even say that? I mean,
that's the problem.
What's pleasure?
That's the problem.
And what does that mean as applied to them?
That's a good question. Go ahead. Through this, they're in a constant state of pleasure. Constant state of pleasure. Something that man cannot have. I mean, that's definitely... Definitely, I think, continue, just finish the sentence.
The intanu gufani etzlam, ve'ino masigim oso lefish ein lahem hushim kimono.
So they have no physical pleasure. Because they have no senses. In order to attain it. Like we attain it. Okay. So I think what he's saying, this is his first point he wants to make over here, is that the big chiluk between our pleasure and their pleasure is what?
Constant.
Yeah. So what is our pleasure?
Intermittent.
Temporal.
Not constant.
Physical. Right. What's the physical pleasure?
Unlimited.
It's a discrete.
Right.
Discrete experience.
It's experiential. It's like an experience. We experience things and we gain pleasure. Experiences of the pleasure is derived through experiences of the senses, for the most part, let's say. Right? There are events that are pleasurable. But there's nothing that's just an existence that's pleasurable. Nothing like that. I mean, when we say it's a pleasurable existence, we mean it has a lot of pleasurable aspects to it. Right? Okay. But pleasure is always a discrete phenomenon.
It results from the experience.
I don't want to limit it. Right, yeah. But it's essentially from experience. It's not constant. Cannot be. Yeah. Cannot be. Correct?
Why not? In theory, if you were to have one... You're saying these certain things are pleasurable experiences.
Because part of the whole idea of pleasure is like...
better than everything.
Is that like a philosopher once said, right? The removal of pain. Yeah. It's part of our makeup.
So that doesn't have to do with the fact that it's this like from experience.
Well, pain goes away.
What kind of pleasure?
It has no. The experience is a pleasure. That's part of the definition. The pleasure is an experience, I should say, rather. That's part of the definition.
You can't keep eating chocolate cake.
That's just part of the definition of pleasure, an experience. What I mean by saying it's part of definition is part of what makes it pleasurable is the fact that it is a discrete experience.
As opposed to what? Like I said,
as opposed to just being conscious. You're overanalyzing. You're overanalyzing.
Like even ideas, let's say, right? Which are most.
Let's not get into the realm of ideas. But you're right. Even in ideas,
get it through experience.
Even ideas, the moment of pleasure is a moment. You feel it, you think about it. That's the pleasure. Mm-hmm. It's not a constant. You're not on a constant higher madriga of happiness or pleasure. It's not even happiness. It's pleasure. It's a very specific thing. Pleasure. It's not happiness. It's pleasure. Okay.
People try to attain that by constantly thinking about their happy experiences, like trying to make that like a constant thing.
Right. But that sometimes leads to depression.
Because then you're wondering, why am I not doing this?
The double-edged sword. Okay. So that's the first distinction. Now, is we can't really understand the experience of pleasure like that. It's just against the whole idea of. But you do sense that it's because of a certain limitation that we can't. You understand? Right? You do sense it's because of a certain limitation in our being that we must have pleasure only through experiences, not through states, not through our state of existence. But you can try to imagine a type of a pleasure that comes through a state of existence. We don't have that type of pleasure. We have pleasures through experiences, senses, awarenesses, realizations, right? But they're all based on a certain idea of, they're based on the fact that they're limited experiences.
And that's why you can see it. Christianity's view of heaven, you know, right? It seems very appealing because it's just supposedly a constant pleasure, and it's a pleasure that you can understand.
That's so right. Well, Islam even more so. Islam even more so, right?
That's pretty base. Yeah.
Christianity is like grace. You know.
Christianity is a little confusing.
They
I don't know
book.
If they have a.
They held book. The older versions held it that it was. I talked to a Catholic. Well, older versions hold it was like you're constantly singing praises to God, but then. People started actually asking what they were going to get and weren't so happy with the
right.
answer. So then they made it
that
up.
That was Mark Twain's joke. You know Mark Twain's joke? He must have been referring to that idea of heaven. He says, I don't know why people would want to have an eternity of something that they hate to do for 2 hours on Sunday.
Yeah. So they changed it. They realized people really did hate it when people started asking. So they changed right. it to all the physical pleasures of this world, but for eternity.
They're big in the family reunion things. That seems to be a big
deal.
Five people you meet in heaven kind of thing.
Right.
It's
an interesting thing, just parenthetically, they have these near-death experiences. You ever see this show on that?
Yeah.
They always have this, it's very similar, these near-death experiences. A lot of times they see family members.
Or the light.
They see the light, and they see family members.
Which makes a lot of sense psychologically.
It's very comforting. They feel completely serene. And comfortable, but yeah, the family members. That's the one of the katam of. That's one of the kitos over here. The family members.
What a katam.
Oh yeah, the, you have your home.
You have your family together.
Yeah.
But anyway.
right.
I meant to joke with
older. But you see, by the way, the thing he told me was that they're trying to also approach this idea of tamid. That it's all the pleasures of this world, but for eternity.
But the thing is, but the problem is, they're stuck in a problem because these pleasures can't be eternal.
Right.
That's the problem. They don't. I mean, it's great to see people is great. That's a great experience. But not to be with them.
Right.
No, you feel great when you see an old friend. Right.
Sit down and talk to him.
How long? The more you spend with him, is diminishing returns. The greatest pleasure is the first time you see him. Then afterwards, it's less and less and less. So if there's an eternity of the after meeting person, then you're really just headed for.
It's funny because
it's really Mark Twain's thing applies to everything, really.
That's true. Okay, go ahead. Okay, no, yeah. So if you really can purify your thinking, if you can purify yourself, right? V'higielosa maila achar ha-moves. And you can arrive at this level, right? In other words, if you can become, he's saying you come to the level of like a malach after you die, right? Then what? You're not going to, the soul that departs from the body doesn't enjoy physical pleasure anymore. Okay, the soul as well, the soul that's attached to your guf doesn't enjoy physical pleasure after you die, and he doesn't want them. Okay, doesn't even want them. Rather, go ahead. So he said, it would be like a king, a king who would want to go back to playing ball in the street.
Who's the poem?
And Mark Twain again. It'd be like a king who wants to go back, who wants to give up the whole covet of his malchus and go play ball in the street. That would be like a soul wanting to go and get a physical pleasure.
When you say, you know what?
It'd be trading down. It would be trading down.
That's a chacham.
Go ahead. Even though there was definitely a time, without a doubt, where he considered playing ball better than the kingdom. Okay.
And
that was when? That was in a young age. At a time of his foolishness, in these two things together. I'm not sure what he means by that, but shnei advarim yachad. Kemosha onu ma'adifim hayom atanu gagufni al nefshi. Saying similar to us now, who consider the pleasure of the body greater than the pleasure of the soul. Saying that's like the king when he was a young man. Because he was confused about the two things, right? So at that time, he considered it a greater good to have fun playing ball than to have the pleasure of being king. But once he reaches that pleasure, once he reaches the stage of king, he never wants to go back. He would not go back to playing ball. So too, he's saying, we, at this stage, because of our lack of knowledge of the two things, we consider the physical greater. But when the soul departs from the body, it will never long to go back to the body.
We don't know the two things. What you're pointing both.
I think he means you don't really understand truly the two types of pleasure. You're a young boy, can't really be masig what it means to be a king.
And also, just to play.
That he can understand, but he can't really understand the two things together. Can't really see the two things and have a true, make a true judgment about which is better. You can't make a true judgment which is better because you really don't know the other one. So then the one you know, you think is definitely better. It's true. You do. It's funny at that stage. You do think you know. And that's the funny thing, right? You do think you know. But yeah, I guess you have no choice. That's the only thing that you're aware of, and you have to have a certain attachment to something. But that's what his example is. But we have time to go further. Yeah, let's go a little further. I want to get a little further, then we'll come back to discuss it again. Go ahead, because he's continuing in this example. Okay, so he's saying that we just don't really realize, I guess most people don't think about the comparison. But he's saying, and therefore everybody wants the tanuge haguf. But he's saying if you would really think into it, if you would think into these two pleasures, you would find the lowness of one and the loftiness of the other.
Wouldn't that be precluded on knowledge of the other?
That's the question that I'm trying to that I want to try to figure out here. Go ahead. She says even in this world, that's what he's saying. He seems to be contradicting a little bit because now he seems to be saying we can have some sort of idea of what it is. Go ahead. He's trying to give an example from this world. Go ahead.
Shari anu motzim rov bnei adam b'ulai kulam matilim al nafsham v'gufam amel yegiya she'in l'mayla mehem.
Okay, so I've mentioned this many times. That what he says that you see most people, and maybe all of them, they place on themselves a lot of work and exertion, right? That there's nothing greater. There's no the height the most exertion that is possible, right? And why do they do this? Why do people suffer? People suffer and work and toil, all for what? And they're really afflicting their bodies, physically, right? And they're tormenting their souls. Why? In order to have kavod. In order to have kavod. In order to reach greatness and to have kavod. Right? Go ahead. So what do you see? So you see that they're willing to suffer. They're willing to suffer a lot of physical torment in order to attain a pleasure that is not a sense pleasure. It's not a pleasure of eating and drinking.
Since people realize that it's not all about the physical, because they're always chasing something else.
That's right. Go ahead. He's trying to make some sort of example of here. That you see, even he's trying to say, even in this world, you should be able to see, from this world, you should be able to see the greatness of the tainug of the nefesh. And he's saying, because even in this world, people do recognize that they're willing to trade in pleasure of the guf, the physical sensory pleasures, for what we call psychological pleasures. Right? We discussed this a little bit when we were doing the brachos, I think. Right? In the kuzari. What the pleasure of making a bracha is. Right? It's a Friday, so... Go ahead.
Probably weren't here.
Rabbi Mene Adam. Adim Nakim. Oiva Yoser. Rabbi Mene Tanigi.
That's definitely true. Right? Most people would much rather take revenge on their enemy than to have a physical pleasure. Right? Given the choice to exact revenge or have a nice meal, definitely go for the revenge. But that's another example where they're passing up a physical sensory pleasure for some other pleasure. So they hold these other pleasures are higher. Right? Go ahead. Right, so you see also people do what? They refrain from engaging in too much pleasure out of fear that they're going to bring some shame upon themselves. Right? Or in order to attain a good reputation. So again, right, again, they will, so what are these three examples getting kind of, right?
The third one?
Oh, so the first one was what? The first one was,
honor.
You want to get honor, right? So you'll actually go through pain, right? That's the first one. You actually suffer burdens. Then he says that what? People would rather have,
revenge.
So So that shows you that that pleasure of covet is a great pleasure, greater than the pleasure of the physical. And then revenge also is another one. And now he's saying you'll also refrain from engaging in pleasure just be out of fear of being embarrassed. Okay. Or because you want a good reputation.
That's funny, because that seems like a bonus.
Seems like the first one, right? Yeah. But he's not saying you're going to suffer. First one is actually is more, is you even suffer.
What's the third again?
Right, there's suffering.
You're just going to refrain from indulgence because you're afraid of
being embarrassed. There's suffering, there's foregoing, there's limiting.
Right. Okay. Go ahead. Vimkach.
Vimkachu.
If that's our situation here, right, that we're willing to gashmi, that we're willing to forego the more base pleasures, the more base physical pleasures for certain psychological considerations, right? Kol shekein b'olam hanafshi. Certainly in the world of the soul. Ula v'hu ha'olam ha'bo. Yeah. So that's kol shekain in olam haba. Right. That that's the world where our soul will gain knowledge from the borei, similar to the knowledge that the higher causes have. That means the like the halacha.
Oh, yes, sir.
Or more. Interesting. All right. Also, a tainig lo yischalek velo yituar ve'ain limso moshal lahamshel bo. Also, a tainig. Ela kemosho amar navi mispali meatz moso ma rav tuvcha shir tzafanta lireacha po'alta lechosim bach. Yeah. So he goes back to say you can't know it at all. It's still nothing in comparison. But he's going to try to. That's why I'm saying he's doing this difficult task of saying you can't understand it at all, right? And there's nothing in that we're like fish to fire or like color to a blind man, and then proceeding to say that what? That you could really understand it, you can understand it somewhat after a lot of thought, and then he's trying to show from examples of this world to that. After he gets through saying there's no way, and then he comes back and says again there's no comparison at all. So there's no comparison at all. I mean, what's to talk about? And also get back to Daniel's question. I mean, and you see again over here he does seem, so how does he, what, where do these pleasures of the king lie, right? What does he say before? He said before we have no pleasure. He says, "Ain etzleinu klal oneg zulas oneg agufos bilvad v'hasogos achushim in amachav amishta v'tashvish." So, what's the pleasure of kavod?
Right.
No. So you do have a pleasure like that, right? So you must say it's two things. It's oneg. That's just oneg agufos.
Even really
there must be two things he's saying. There's oneg agufos and hasogas achushim min amachav amishta v'tashvish. So it's oneg, even the psychological pleasure he calls oneg aguf. That's still called oneg aguf.
By contrast to what is in the next one.
So that's also something you have to think about. And even the pleasure from learning is ultimately a psychological pleasure. Right? We've discussed this. It's still a psychological phenomenon of pleasure. Not the pleasure that comes from the state of being, from a certain state of being.
So where does that pleasure stem from?
I don't know if you can answer that, where it stems from.
I guess part of man. We have any, it's something we just can't comprehend. If intellectual pleasures are considered then I guess we really can't.
Well, that's what he's trying to explain. He's trying to explain the mark of the pleasure of the ruchni. That it's tumid. that he seems to say is that, I mean, we have to think about it, but that seems to be the main mark. Right? Because a goof, like the Rambam talks about in the Yad also, he says, if you have a goof, right, like he says in, in Hilchos Tshuva, I think, right, maybe you saw the Torah, that the soul doesn't have any sadness or any of these things, happiness, sadness, jealousies, or none of these things exist in the soul, because those are all occurrences. Those are all based on occurrences of the goof. Something happens makes you jealous. Something happens makes you sad. It means to say that you're in the realm, you have to be in the realm of happenstance. You know what I mean? That's only the realm of the goof. The soul does not exist like that. The soul is a constant, unchanging existence. Things don't happen to it. That type of pleasure has to be, if there is a pleasure, which he's saying there is, it has to be tamid. Because it doesn't have a good day and a bad day. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's nature. Its understanding is just part of its existence. And he's saying that understanding is a pleasurable experience. It has to be a tamid. We can't have any idea like that. But I think what he's trying to show you, sorry for interrupting, the difference between when he's trying to explain the psychological and the physical, right, he's trying to show you that we go for, man recognizes that the less it's based on an immediate event, the greater the pleasure is. Man does recognize that. The pleasure of kavod is more constant than the pleasure of the pure base physical. Those are pure occurrences. This is a certain state that you're trying to maintain, but it's still not like the just based on your very existence. It's still based on things that you maneuvered into place, but it's not just your existence. But you do see, man does see that he would much rather have the pleasures of the greater framework, because that than just the experience. That's what we said by the bracha, right? That with the bracha, it brings it to the level of the metaphysical. Right? You were there?
Yeah.
You were there. Yeah. So he's saying, we can't really understand what kind of a thing that is, a pleasure that's based on the existence, but we can see that those types of pleasure man does strive for. Man does strive for pleasure that partakes of a more permanent nature, as opposed to based on an event.